All right. Sorry about that, everybody. Just some technical difficulties as we continue to work through all of these awesome technological resources that we have while we're figuring out how to stay in community during COVID-19 social isolation. We're going to wait for Emily to get back in here. But for folks who might not have heard that first part, this is another episode where we are interviewing and highlighting one of our awesome community members, Emily Carmichael. And we were just talking about how super civically engaged she is and all the work that she's been doing with different organizations. I think we've got her back in here.
I'm back.
And
I'm
all
back.
right.
I
All right.
wonder how
Good
long
to
I was
hear
just
you again.
talking. I think I was just talking into a void for a lot of that answer, which is fine because I don't even
Normal
remember what
for
the question
you. Oh my gosh. You,
No.
listeners, Emily and I were roommates in during our Iowa presidential tour when we went to Iowa, and we stayed up many, many late nights.
Yes,
And many
we did.
times she was probably still talking into a void while I was sleeping.
What?
Just kidding, just kidding. Anyways, okay, so we were talking about how important it is for women to get elected. And as you were talking, I was just listening and kind of reflecting a little bit about how, as I was growing up, I had the privilege, I think, of recognizing that there were a lot of really awesome elected women here in Washington State that I could look up to.
Right.
The women that had been mayor of Tacoma while I was in Tacoma, where I grew up. Even figures like, of course, our senators, Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell, and we had Christine Gregoire. So I noticed that there were a lot of women in leadership around, at least around here. And it was just fascinating to me, like when I first got with Common Purpose in 2018, and I was a Nevada captain, and we went to Nevada and had the awesome opportunity to be a part of helping elect Jackie Rosen to Senate and helping elect a lot of state Senate candidates that were women. To find out that Nevada in 2018 actually elected its first majority female state
I
legislature, but
know.
like in history of like the whole nation. And then
I
when we
know.
were researching about Iowa, I found out in 2018, Iowa actually elected its first two senators to the US Senate that were women ever in, or not senators, I'm sorry, congresswomen. In Cindy Axne and Abby Finkenauer. And I'm
Right.
just like, wow, I'm just blown away at how privileged I was to be able to grow up seeing that there were women around me that were elected officials and leading, and how that's not the case all over the nation. And
No,
I think
yeah.
it's powerful, and I think it's it really speaks to the importance of the work that you're doing with Emerge. So I appreciate it.
No, it's true. I mean,
Yeah.
people in Washington are spoiled with that for a long time. There have been a lot of women political leaders, and that is a absolutely not the case in other states. And Nevada has done an incredible job. There's actually been an
Yeah.
Emerge in Nevada because it's a national organization that has state affiliates. So there's been an Emerge in Nevada for over 10 years for a while, and they've been really successful. And so part of that, the reason they have that majority right now, I think, is due to organizations like Emerge that are out there recruiting women, training them, telling them, yes, this is absolutely a job for you. We need your voice. We need you to be at this table.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully within Common Purpose, I'll be able to help and work with a lot of other women that are running and help be a part of more historical moments, but that eventually there'll just be so many women leaders and so many women in office.
Right.
That's normal, right?
That is just a normal thing, that it won't be a big deal. That is the dream.
Yeah. And I know you're going to be a big part of that, because you're just, you're all over the place, Emily. And so you mentioned Nevada, we've mentioned Iowa, and that we met you in Seattle, but that you have really kind of been all over the place. You're pretty dang well traveled. And I know that when we approached you about being one of our state leads, that part of it and how you ended up being the state lead for the states that you're in was hoping to like check off some of the states. For places that you hadn't traveled. So no, I'm wondering if you could just share a little bit about where you've been, where you've traveled to, if you've got like maybe a favorite spot or something. But in general, like why is traveling important to you? Because I didn't really get to travel that much pre-Common Purpose.
Yeah. Well, I'm originally from Alabama, which always surprises people.
All right.
I don't have an accent anymore. I went.
I've heard it come out
a little bit. Yeah, it'll come out a little bit. Depends on who I'm talking to. So I grew up in Alabama. My whole family on my dad's side is from there. I went to Brown in Rhode Island. So I left when I was 18, and then I think just none of my peers had accents, so it just sort of died away. And then I lived in New York City for 6 years. And then my husband and I moved here, almost 12 years ago, which is crazy to me. But I, majored in French in college, and just, I've always had a love of languages. And so part of my studies in French meant that I went to France a bunch of times, like studying abroad. I have I did a really short exchange program in high school, and I'm still super connected to that family. We just were, we took our whole family to Paris for Christmas this year, to visit some friends that had moved there and see other friends, that we're close with. So, I mean, for me, it's really important, and not just, you know, international travel is super important, but also it's so interesting to go to different states. And as somebody who's from a region that's completely different from the Pacific Northwest, and then also lived in New England, lived in the Northeast, it's really interesting to go to different states and just, you know, get a feel for how people live. And I think we have these assumptions. Like, I mean, I've heard this, you know, ever since I started leaving Alabama and was like cognizant of other people's kind of commentary on that state.
Yeah.
Just people have a lot of preconceived notions or assumptions about, you know, what somebody who's from the South is like, or what it's like to live in a red state, or in a blah, 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 or whatever the stereotype is. And it's just really, I mean, I feel like take our trip to Iowa, for example. We were there for what, like, I don't even know, 6 days, a week? I don't remember. But time is so amorphous right now. That trip could have been last week or 7 years ago. I don't even know. But, you know, people are like, oh, Iowa, like, why would you want to go there? You know, it's a flyover state, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I thought it was great.
That was totally me too. When I first was voluntold by the wonderful David Domke to do Iowa this year, since we weren't doing Nevada, and I was like, Iowa, you know, farms, you know,
yeah, right.
So farms. I hear you. Yeah, I totally hear you.
But I thought it was great. Like, there's all these little, you know, there's all these, you know, smaller cities that we went to there have character, and they have, I mean, there's interesting things to discover. It was fun talking to the people there. Like, it's just, you really don't know until you go to a place and talk to actual people that live there, you know, what it's really like.
Absolutely. And now I'm just like, waiting for the minute that I can go back. And I never thought that I'd be saying that, because I loved it.
I know. It was so fun. And I had, I mean, two of my states are states that I've never been to before. And I totally want to visit all 50 states. Sometimes I tell people that and they're like, why? And I'm just like, you know, that's the same person that would say something like, if I say I'm from Alabama, sometimes people will say, oh, I'm sorry, which is so horribly rude.
Oh, wow.
And presumptuous and just, I don't even know, but because it's just so interesting to visit these different places. And so I was excited. Right. I was supposed to go to Alaska at the beginning of April.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And also Kansas is another state. And, you know, Kansas is right next to Missouri. You fly into Missouri.
Sure.
So I was like, oh, I could cross that one off too. You know, all these.
Yeah.
All these things I was going to cross or I'm going to cross off my list this year. Because if I say it's going to happen, it will happen.
Yeah. How many do you have left? How many states?
Off the top of my head, I'm not really sure. I think it's like 12.
Okay.
It's not that many. Because I've lived in such, like, a lot of people will be like, oh, yeah, I've been, you know, all these places, except, like, I haven't been anywhere in the South. People tell me that. Or, like, I'm afraid to go to the South. But since I grew up there, I have been to all the Southern states. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And there's more than meets the eye there, huh?
Absolutely. There's definitely more than meets the eye.
Yeah. So what does, I know different people have kind of qualifications for being in a state, or being able to say that you've visited a state, and, you know, airports don't count. Qualifies for you having visited a state?
That's a good question. I mean, I think you have to spend, you know, part of a day there and like have a meal, talk to some people. it can't just be like driving through. You have to stop. But I've also never driven across the country, so.
Oop, don't say that. Dude, you know that David is gearing up to try and put together his across the nation road trip.
Yeah, right? Well, he already drove to Kentucky from where. I mean, we're supposed to go visit family this summer, and I have definitely looked into. So we typically will take our kids and go to New Hampshire and see my husband's family, and then we'll go to Alabama and see my family. And I was seriously looking at like how long of a drive is that, and then. Mm-hmm. Realizing that I would probably die before we got there because five people, two adults and three kids in like our tiny minivan, our miniature minivan.
Totally.
Yeah. No, I was like, oh, we could cross off a lot of states.
Yeah.
If we did that. Yeah.
Oh, man. That's super fun. I'm going to try and make it a goal in my life to door knock in as many states as I can. That canvassing
will maybe be
my little test for like, have I actually talked to somebody? Have I actually experienced? So
you're up in the ante here, Maria. You really, I'm going to, because I've only door knocked in Alabama. I went down there and canvassed with my dad when Doug Jones was running. In December, was that 2017? Yes, it was. I don't even know. And I've door knocked in Washington, Iowa, and Alabama. So I can only say three states for that so far.
But about to be three more.
About to be three more. That's right. That's correct.
So tell us what's going on with those three states right now. You mentioned that you were about to be traveling to Alaska, but obviously your travel has been suspended for now. You mind sharing just a little bit about each of those states and what's going on and any updates that you've got?
Sure. So Alaska they have automatic voter registration. So instead of doing a voter registration trip this spring, we were going to help get out the vote for some Anchorage municipal elections. That did not end up happening. The elections happened, but we were not there. But we've been talking with our partner organization about remote opportunities for the next couple of months. And then we're definitely planning a trip to go in October, around October 21st, when early voting starts there. But they're continuing to monitor the situation in terms of how many, what absentee voting is going to be like. Like, if they'll be able to vote earlier than October 21st, we might go out earlier than that. And then we're also planning a summer trip, and that might be around the August primary. So that's for Alaska. And then Kansas.
Nice. Well, hold on.
Oh, sorry. You have questions. Okay.
Yeah. With Alaska, why is it an important state for common purpose?
I'm so glad you asked, Maria. So Alaska has one congressional seat, and it is, I believe, the longest serving member in Congress is the person who is currently occupying that seat. And there is a woman running against him. Her name is Elise Galvin. She is actually an Emerge trained woman. She did an Emerge boot camp.
All right.
I have met her. She has been to Seattle, and we had coffee. I want to say it was in March, like maybe at the very beginning, but it could have been February. I don't remember.
Nice.
But anyway, she's fantastic. So she is running. She ran actually 2 years ago for that seat and was not successful, but came pretty close. And now she's taking this person on again. He's 86 years old. She is, I think, in her 40s. She's a mom, you know, was very active. Much like me. So one of my issues that I've done a lot of advocacy work on is public education, public school funding. And so she has a weirdly similar, I don't know, not resume, but whatever you want to call it, to me, where that is also something that she's been really active in. In Alaska, and then just kind of realized, like, the more involved she got in trying to get better funding for public education, et cetera, she realized that she really should run for office. So she is running against Don Young. She's got a really great shot at winning. The best indicator for electoral success is is often past that you've run before, even if you've lost. Mm-hmm. So she has, you know, her campaign is a lot more professional now. She has great name recognition. So we will be working to support her, to get her elected. And then the other seat that we are looking at is the Senate, the United States Senate, because as we all should
know, that's important.
Flipping the Senate is a huge, huge deal. So Al Gross is running to flip a Senate seat in Alaska. So he's a physician, grew up, born and raised in Alaska. He's also a commercial fisherman. So he's got a really interesting background. And there's not a lot of medical professionals in Congress. And I think, you know, we're seeing that would be that might be a good thing to have.
Yeah.
That becomes more, it's become you really know? Important lately.
Who knew?
People that know about science, it's amazing, or disease. So those are the two, those are like the two big things that we're focusing on in Alaska, and both of those races have great shots at winning, and I'm just incredibly excited about supporting those two candidates. I think that they would just do amazing work in Congress.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, I totally
agree.
That's
Alaska. Yeah.
Right. I think, 86 years old. That's incredible. But I also think that, you know, maybe it's time for some new leadership there in Alaska. And then, oh my gosh, also, I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Al Gross when he was in Seattle. One of the times he has some ties here.
Oh, nice.
Here.
Yeah,
he's a really earnest guy, really energetic and ready to get in and win this thing. So gosh, if I could get out there and go to Alaska with you, I'd like to go.
I know. I'm so excited. I've never been to Alaska. I'm just excited to visit that state, talk to the people, and support these two candidates. And then any down ballot candidates too that are running. I mean, that's also, I'm incredibly passionate about that. I think people get too focused on like who's at the top of the ticket. And that's really important. Yeah. Obviously who the president is really important, or the governor. But it's also about building the bench. Like, we need to have better people elected to our state legislatures, to our city councils, on the school board, just everything up and down the ballot. There's no election that's too small to be passionate about or to be focused on, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Not to mention, Dr. Algirls has like some of the most badass campaign videos. If you've gotten a chance to see those of him, like skiing, the rock music, him on the fishing boat, all of it. It's pretty good. So,
I think his kids, at least one of his kids, is pretty involved in the campaign. So I feel like that's totally the that could be partially due to their positive influence, but
awesome stuff. Okay, what's your next state?
Okay, so then we're just moving across the country. Then we've got Kansas. Kansas mm-hmm. has a thrilling opportunity also in the United States Senate. There is an open seat, and we have Barbara Beaulieu running. She is currently a state senator. She's been in the state legislature for, over a decade, I believe. She was a representative mm-hmm. first, and now she's in the Senate. She actually was a Republican until a couple of years ago when she switched her party affiliation. I met her at an event, I think like very early March, when we were still having in-person events, and was really impressed with her as a candidate, just as a person, her record in the state legislature is incredible. It's really interesting. And she explained, you know, why she had been a Republican. Cause she was saying that's like pretty much, she was a very moderate Republican, but kind of most people that get elected in Kansas are Republicans. And so it wasn't, like ideologically, she obviously aligns more with the Democratic Party now, which is why she switched her party affiliation, but I mean, she's pro-choice. She's, knows that climate change is real, like things like that. That as time has gone on, it became more and more clear to her that she could no longer be a part of the Republican Party. And then I think she just explained it as that it was that. Not that it was nonpartisan, but that it just wasn't, you know, especially as far as state politics go in Kansas, that there wasn't this super divisive situation, you know, when she first got into politics, and that it was like she'd always been a Republican, and that things weren't extreme in the way that they seem to be now. So I don't know. It was interesting, but she is a really impressive candidate. She's running against Kris Kobach, who used to be the governor of Kansas until he was voted out in 2018. And Laura Kelly, am I getting her name right? Now I'm blanking on these things. Yeah, she's the current governor. Laura Kelly, who's a Democrat, was voted in, and he got kicked out. So people really don't like him. So, which is great news for Barbara Beaulieu. So she can absolutely win that race. And then we would also be most likely supporting the reelection of Charisse Davids, who is an amazing, totally badass woman, lawyer, former MMA fighter. She's a veteran. She's just incredible. She won. She was part of the big wave that won in 2018 and helped and flipped the house. So me supporting her reelection and potentially working in another congressional district to flip a seat And there's another amazing woman who's running. Her name is Michelle De La Isla. I think she's currently the mayor of Topeka, Kansas. So really amazing opportunities in Kansas. I think that is a sleeper for sure. That's one that people aren't necessarily thinking about. I think everybody is thinking more about, like, let's get rid of Mitch McConnell, which that's where we're headed that way. We're going to Kentucky next. But
yeah.
But Kansas has, you know, great opportunities to pick up a Senate seat and also to get another House seat. I think that's, I don't know. I would, that's one I'm really, really excited about. I think Barbara Boley is going to win, and I would just love to see her in the Senate.
Nice, nice. And it'd be electing another woman.
It'd be electing another woman. She's also a doctor. So that's pretty incredible too. Again, there just aren't enough medical providers in Congress. So she wants to help people. I mean, that's why she became a doctor. So
And then why she went
into public service. Yeah. And then Kentucky. Sorry, you have another question about Kansas.
No, I was just going to say, gosh, it's extra meaningful being able to support somebody, I think, who made that switch from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party, because it just, it speaks to values, that this isn't always about party allegiance, that this is about people, and this is about doing the right thing. And that's just inspiring. And I think, and I hope that there are a lot of people that would want to support her because of that. And
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So awesome. No, Kentucky.
So ooh. Kentucky is all about Mitch McConnell. That guy, you know, he is the most dangerous person in politics right now in elected office. And has been for a while, because of, you know, what he's been able to do to our court system that has just really shaped our country. It's shaping things right now. I mean, look at the ruling that just came down for the elections in Wisconsin. Look at all the people that were put in danger. That was just unconscionable. And there's, you know, just threats to the environment, to women's autonomy over their bodies, et cetera, et cetera. He's guilty. He's complicit in all this. So getting rid of him would be, and also taking the majority would be incredible. So Amy McGrath is the candidate that's running, that looks like she will be the likely person running against him. There's a few people that will be in the primary. So, and she's also a veteran. I believe she was a fighter pilot. She ran for Congress 2 years ago. So she's got name recognition, which, as I was saying before, is really important in politics.
Yeah.
So that's an exciting election that I think a lot of people are focused on, and it's definitely an uphill battle, which is crazy because it's hard for people to wrap their brains around that, because people really don't like Mitch McConnell. People in Kentucky don't like Mitch McConnell. So why does he, and then Kentucky just, and Common Purpose went to Kentucky just, you know, several months ago and helped with the gubernatorial elections and others, and helped elect a Democrat to the governor's office. So
yes,
there's momentum there. There's absolutely momentum there. And, you know, that's one of the reasons we're going to Kentucky, is to keep that momentum alive, to really harness that momentum and see if we can propel some more Democrats or some more progressive candidates to victory this fall. And it would be fantastic if Amy McGrath was one of those, as well as whatever down ballot races are up. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough, how important it is to, to focus on every last part of that ballot, not just what's at the top of the ticket. So,
right. Well, that's, good to hear that he's not very, Mitch McConnell isn't very popular in Kentucky either. Do you think that there's maybe just like different forms of voter suppression that are making it harder? Like what have you got going on that we need to fight there?
I mean, I don't know a lot of details about voter suppression in Kentucky, but other than just to be sure that it's definitely happening. I mean, it happens everywhere. Sure. I know that they passed, I mean, because the problem is the governor, they have a Democratic governor, but their state legislature is controlled by Republicans.
Okay.
So, I think they've had a pretty chaotic legislative session this year. There've been, Kansas is experiencing a similar problem right now too, like Democratic governor, but Republican controlled legislature, where there's been a lot of anti-abortion bills that are coming up and, different since they won't be signed into law because the governor is vetoing them. In both states, there are groups that are putting them on the ballot. So as issues, as ballot measures. And that's happening in both Kansas and Kentucky. There's been a photo ID law, an ID bill that was passed in Kentucky this legislative session to make voters have to show photo identification before casting a ballot. And that's absolutely to protect Mitch McConnell's seat. I mean, there's no voter fraud as hopefully we are all aware, voter fraud is just doesn't really happen. It's not a thing. Mm-hmm. It's so, so rare. And so when you see measures like that and laws like that being passed, it's to keep people from voting, people that have, that don't have access to getting a photo identification, a piece of photo identification. Right. Alabama, where I'm from, has a voter ID law and also, I mean, has done just extraordinarily ridiculous things to keep people from voting, like shutting down DMVs all over the place, but primarily in communities that are majority African-American. A lot of people don't have the $35 or $45 or the documents that it takes to go and get a piece of photo ID. And one of the things, my dad is also politically active where he lives. And so that's something that he, an organization he volunteers with, helps get people photo ID so that they can vote. But it's it's just all these hurdles. It's the same thing as a poll tax. I mean, it's not.
Oh, yeah, because you have to pay for it.
It's the same stuff. It's the same thing that they've been doing for decades. It's just a different name for it. That kind of stuff is definitely happening in Kentucky. So
yeah. Well, we're gonna do all that we can with absolutely common purpose. Yep. Have you made any good partnerships in any of these states yet, or still in the works?
I have great partners. In Kentucky, we're working with an organization called Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, which I believe David Domke referred to as the gold standard. So that was exciting. I felt really excited to get hooked up with them.
Is Kentucky a Commonwealth?
It is. It is a Commonwealth. Oh. Yeah. So we were going to work with Planned Parenthood to do voter registration there like in May or June, but mm-hmm. they are just so slammed with all the anti-abortion activity that's happening there right now that they just honestly did not have the time to take on another project. So I got connected with Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, and they are so excited to have Common Purpose volunteers coming. And they have offices in several different cities around Kentucky. So nice. Which was great. So they really kind of left it up to us, do you want to come to Louisville? Do you want to be in Lexington? Where do you want to be? And they were very willing and ready and able to work with us.
Where was that? Louisville?
I say Louisville.
Louisville.
Louisville. I think that is that's what people from the South say. Also, Kentucky is not in the Midwest or wherever David put it at our. I think it could, well, it is right by Ohio, and people like you can fly into Ohio to get to Kentucky, but yeah, it's in the South. So they were not part of the Confederacy. So I think it's confusing for people that still want to hold on to those things, that era.
Okay, sounds like a good partner.
Kentucky. Yeah, so they're a great partner. I'm very excited to be working with them. In Kansas, I've communicated a lot with the League of Women Voters. They're doing a big centennial of the women's right to vote in August. They're doing a big celebration for that. So the plan is to go out and register voters. I think it's the third week of August, sometime around like August 22nd, 23rd. So they're doing just like this whole, you know, celebration of the right to vote / voter registration / like turn in your census event in August. So that's the plan, to go out for that and then to go back in the fall to canvass leading up to Election Day. And then in Alaska, I am working with an organization called the Alaska Center. They are a really cool organization. I think they were originally founded as an environmental org, but then expanded to include progressive issues in general. And they have they're both a 501c4 and a 501c3. So we're working with both of their entities to do canvassing, voter outreach, possibly some census work. It just kind of depends on, and that's for the remote opportunities, but also for the, for what we'll be doing in person when we're canvassing for Al Gross and Elise Galvin. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about these partners, and it's really fun to talk to them too, and just hear the excitement and appreciation in their voices, because I feel like I had to answer a lot of questions, especially from the Alaska Center, because it was almost like they couldn't, it was like too good to be true. They're like, y'all are going to come here and we don't really have to. Okay. And yeah, it was just, it's really thrilling to bring groups of volunteers like this and really help people amplify their work.
That sounds awesome. And I think it speaks so much to the mobilization part of our common purpose way, where we make sure to always build that good relationship with the partner, follow the lead of the partner organization, always making sure that we're in support and, like you're saying, amplifying the work that they're doing so that they can continue to sustain their work after we leave. And it's so uplifting to be able to know that we are providing just a little bit of relief, maybe, to some of the volunteers that are there that might need like a little energy boost or maybe even a little bit of a break, and to be able to help from afar, when sometimes it can just feel like what can we even do from out here? Well, you can go with Emily to any of these three states.
That's
Come and get some awesome people elected.
Yes. We're going to flip the setup. Good stuff. We're going to do it. I know it.
Yeah. Totally. Okay. So you are a state lead. You have been to workshops. You have held events for us. And you also got to go on the civic tour we've mentioned a couple times to Iowa with Common Purpose.
I did.
And that experience, you know, was a little bit different from our normal fieldwork experiences. This was an opportunity to engage in the caucus that ended up being like a little bit of a disaster. But
yes.
To see some of the the candidates up close because the candidates are all campaigning there. The presidential candidates, sorry, are all campaigning there because Iowa is one of the first to primary with their caucus. So I'm just wondering, what did you learn on that tour that might have been different from the stuff that we normally do fieldwork wise?
For me, actually having been there and then seeing kind of the meltdown that happened afterwards,
mm-hmm.
I came out of that trip feeling really optimistic and full of energy for the electoral work for the rest of the year. And so when you go on a trip and you're canvassing, you know, sometimes there's events where you're at a rally with a candidate, or you're at, you know, a big like canvassing launch and a couple candidates come and give you a pep talk and then send you all off. And that's really thrilling and invigorating and inspiring and makes you even more excited to go out there and knock doors. This was like that on steroids, because you're not necessarily being launched to do canvasses, though we did do a day of canvassing while we were in Iowa, but that was you know, totally up to us as individuals to kind of organize together. But it was just, you know, those in-person events that you might get a couple of times during an election season. You had like, you know, 10 to 20 of them in like a 5-day period.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. You know, was kind of crazy in that we were all over the place. Like, we were driving all around the state. Whereas
shout out to Troy and to Charles,
Troy and Charles, who, and David. You, and Maria did a decent amount of driving herself.
Ellen Ferguson, shout out to Ellen Ferguson.
Oh yeah, Ellen's the best. Oh my God, thank you, Ellen. Yeah. Thank you for existing. Thank you, Ellen. You know, I think in a typical canvassing trip, you're not going to necessarily be driving that much. And you're going to be talking to more voters. But for us, I mean, we were talking to people. Like, we'd go to these rallies and we'd strike up conversations with the people that we were sitting next to. Or Maria and I would get on stage behind the speakers and sit next to a bunch of people we didn't know, and then became, you know, best friends with, because we were there for like 4 hours on this stage. Yeah. But yeah, it was just, it's wild because you're in these small towns. And, you know, like the first night we got there, I drove with Troy and two of our other volunteers to this tiny little town, and we went to an event with Julian Castro in a little coffee shop, and then like around the corner, Ben and Jerry were having a party for Bernie Sanders with Michael Moore and like some other people. I mean, it was just it's kind of mind-blowing the access that people in that state have, and then by extension we also got that access because we showed up. But I thought it was really invigorating, made me really excited about the possibilities in 2020. You know, then there was kind of the meltdown, and I was getting texts from people asking if I had broken the Iowa caucuses. I was like, no, that was not my fault. But I do hope that they will have a primary in the future, because caucuses are problematic. I mean, we talked to a lot of people when we were canvassing, and just when we were like, we went to the Love It or Leave It podcast taping, we talked to people that weren't going to be able to caucus because they were out of town for work, or because they're not physically able to go and, you know, stand in a room for 4 hours and deal with all the chaos, or they couldn't get someone to watch their kids, or they were working, you know, at that exact time. Yeah. So I think the access, there's just not enough access in a caucus situation.
Right. I definitely came away learning from that, feeling energized. I've never, you know, experienced that type of primarying where you have to like literally go gather in schools and churches and libraries and stand there. And there are a lot of ways that it was like inaccessible, like you were talking about. And I should also say for listeners who might not have known what had happened in Iowa earlier this year, they're the first to have their primary. And there were some changes that were made. They were supposed to have different rounds of voting that were going to be announced. And they were going to use a new mobile app to report the results. But then there were technical difficulties with the app. And a lot of things went wrong. But I guess coming out of that, I really felt like, okay, well, then there's a lot of work to do, and I'm energized and excited to be able to be a part of that work, you know, how to fix it, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it was a great experience to have with you, Emily. You definitely made it way more fun.
I had so much fun getting to know all of y'all, and Maria's the best roommate ever. We had a lot of fun talking until sometimes too late in the night.
Yeah. Okay. So we're coming to the end of this here, but let me see if I can ask you something a little bit more fun. Well, you do have like some of the most beautiful kids that I've ever seen photos of or ever seen.
You've seen a couple of them. You were at my house that time. They were kind of squirreled away downstairs.
But totally, yeah. And you're in isolation with them now. They're watching some movies. Hopefully, you guys have been having to have some fun. But I don't know. Isolation has been. It's been hard for me. I miss everybody. I really get a lot of energy from my community. And I think a lot about what kinds of things give me hope. And I think like you're there with your kids, and you're probably thinking a lot about, you know, the future that you want them to have. So I guess if I could ask a last question, it would be, what are you hoping for their future, and what kinds of things are getting you through social isolation right now?
I think it's definitely really hard to be to be isolated like this, since my kids are used to being at school. They're used to being around other people. They're not just getting all their needs met just by the two of us. But I think the thing about kids is that they are so in the moment. I mean, my kids are 3, 6, and 9. So especially the younger kids are just focused on like, what game am I playing right now? Like, am I hungry right now? You know, and so it kind of forces you to pull back a little bit from the constant, you know, when is this going to end? What is the world going to look like after this scourge wins its way through our communities, and just like the daily, you know, the joy that they find in the silliest things just brings you back to that moment. And then just trying to focus on that joy when there are more trying moments. I'm glad that I have them around, because it definitely, I'm not bored. I'm absolutely not bored. It gives me plenty of work to do. And there's a lot of extra together time, but there's a lot of extra like snuggle time and time playing together and reading books together that we otherwise wouldn't have had. I'm hopeful for the future. I'm hopeful that I think this is devastating economically and for a lot of people's health and well-being. And so that scares the crap out of me. But on the flip side, maybe the silver lining is that I'm hopeful this is going to be a sort of reset, you know, hey, we do need universal health care. Hey, we do need a better social safety net for people. So I'm really, really hopeful that this is going to usher in an era where we have some political reform in the sense of having a better safety net and taking care of people better, and just changing that mentality that we seem to have in this country of like, every man for himself, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I hate that expression. And just realizing that like we all need each other and we all need to help each other, and that that help can come from the government, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Can't wait. You're incredible.
Yeah.
Thank you so
you're
much.
You're incredible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for including me. I hope this is interesting to people.
Yeah, it turns out after people listen to this, you're going to see like signups drop for your states. No.
Oh, no.
No. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, you've been incredible. And if you're listening, I hope you're considering signing up to join Emily in one of her awesome states, Alaska, Kansas, Kentucky. You can sign up to get updates from her about her work and the team's work at cpnow.org, cpnow.org. And Emily, say hello to your family and your kids for me. I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to talk with you. And thank you, everyone. I hope you all tune in for our next With CP podcast.
Thank you, Maria.
All right. Talk to you later, Emily.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks.